Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Say.
Welcome to our latest episode of the Kosafa Show, where we wrap up the recent Kosafa Under 17 tournaments that were staged at the Region 5 Games in Lilongwe and reflect on the World Cup in Qatar that ends on Sunday. Zambia and South Africa qualified for the Total Energies Under 17 AFCON Algeria 2023, which we played in April next year, after reaching the final of the boys' competition in Malawi, though it was the young Chipolo Polo who took the gold medal. We'll hear first from their coach Ian Bakala about his side's triumph.
Well, I think the journey for this player started a long way back. They were under 15 national team. Yeah, I think we were preparing for this tournament. They went to Georgia. They came back. They have been training together for a while. And I think to prepare for this tournament, I think we were just in camp, I think, for 2 weeks. And I think it was just tactical that moment when we went in camp. I haven't with them for so long. It's only 2 weeks plus this tournament here, this period. And I think in that 2 weeks I was with them. They gelled with the philosophy of the national team, what we wanted. And although they're playing like this, they're not yet there also. Yeah, because again, the understanding, I think they're still young, they're still gelling. But the preparation was okay. We had two friendlies in Zambia, of which I think we saw the things we have to correct before we came here. And they showed character in training. Even the morale was high as we are coming here. We knew that we are going to have a good tournament. The first objective was to qualify to CAN, of which we did. And the second objective is to get the cup. And I think we have prepared the players so well.
What does qualifying for AFCON mean to you as a coach and also to this group of players to the football development in Zambia?
Well, I think it means a lot. It's my first time to be the coach for the national team. When I was a player, I started playing for the national team from this stage as an under 17 national team to the senior national team. I understand very well when I started coaching also at the club. I started with the youth, and seeing this youth here, it wasn't difficult for me. And I think going forward, I think for me as a coach, I want to build players for the future for the country. And if you have seen this quality of players we have, I think we are preparing them for the future. It's not just for tomorrow, it's for the future. And we want them at least to bring something to Zambia when they go to the senior team. We are still developing them, and this age, it's very difficult.
What can you say about the teams that you faced in the group, and what did it take you to sail through the group stages?
Well, I think it's just the commitment of players and unity and understanding the philosophy. And there's something which we have put into players. They should have a championship mentality. Even if you are playing which team, you have to come like lions. They have to feel you guys, because I think for them, preparing them like this, it's good for us, because even where they're going there, I think they'll find more than this, which is, I think at the moment, they're doing it, and hopefully to see them do more for Zambian football.
South Africa were runners-up in the boys' competition, but showed plenty of potential under their new coach, Duncan Crowe. We spoke to him about the competition and the continental finals in Algeria next year.
Yeah, we had a difficult task because we had quite a number of players, more than 100 players that were invited to, let's call it a trial camp. And at that trial camp, we wanted to select about 40 players to come back for another camp so that we can be 100% sure that we've got the right players. But of course, we know that you're always going to make a mistake. And so far, it worked out beautifully for us. We had the trial camp. And then 2 weeks before the tournament itself, we had a camp where we prepared technically and tactically for this tournament.
What were you specifically looking for in selecting the players?
Man, nowadays it's not only about your skill. It's about the values inside the player as well. We had a few players at the camp that, let's put it plainly, with attitudes and so on. And that is not what we want if you want to be successful and if you want to be champions. We don't want any rotten apples within our crate. So, we were looking at certain values in certain players. But, of course, the main core subject is you must be able to play. So those were the things we were looking at.
And now, what was your objective going to this tournament?
Well, everybody, of course, they come here to win the tournament. And there were two objectives. Yes, the first one, reach the final. That enables you to play in the African Cup of Nations next year. And then, of course, we've got another one, another objective to go for. Now that we're in the final, everybody wants to win the final. If you're in soccer, just for the love of it, fine. But if you want to become a professional soccer player, you've got to play to win. And that's what it's all about this time around.
Tournament football has its own dynamics. How did you navigate your way through the group?
Man, we were fortunate. We were blessed in the sense that we won our first two games. That enabled us to advance to the knockout stages. And that gave us an opportunity to play the players that never played and rest the players that were regulars. So that helped us a bit. And hopefully, nobody will be fresh for tomorrow's final. But at least they had some rest in between. And hopefully that will help them to perform to the best of their ability in the final.
What can you say about this group of South Africa players in terms of their physical and the technical attributes?
Man, if I look at the players that they competed against in this COSAFA Cup, we matched them for size, we matched them for strength, and with the ability of playing soccer, of course, that goes hand in hand. So the strength part is there and the size is there as well.
How did you look at the level of competition in your group and across the entire tournament?
We knew when we came here that Zambia, unfortunately, Angola was disqualified. We knew that they were regular competitors as far as the COSAFA Cup is concerned. And we studied them a little bit. The information that we had, we studied a little bit so that when we come up against them, then at least we know how to approach it.
Any particular game that had created a big impression in you that you would always remember in this tournament?
Man, every game has got different values. We came up against a team like Seychelles. We won 11-0. The important thing that we can take from that game is the players wanted to continue scoring goals because that is what soccer is all about. We could so easily have gone into a rut and say, let's play around, let's fool around, but that's not what it's about. Score as many goals as what you can, that is it. The next game we came up against Mozambique, we scored one goal, but we had so many opportunities. So that was another lesson learned. Take your opportunities, otherwise you're going to struggle in the end. But we know nobody's perfect. Nobody's going to put away all the goals. Against Zambia, we gave everybody an opportunity. We came unstuck with 1-0. But defensively, I think we were very good in that game. There will always be that pressure. If you're going through the motions, then there will be no pressure. So pressure will always be there. So I don't see pressure as a factor. It's how we control that that pressure when the first whistle starts.
You must be excited you are through to AFCON. What does that mean to you and South African football in general?
For South African football, it will be a gauge of where we are as far as this level of football is concerned, because you can only gauge it when you play strength versus strength. And I think strength versus strength doesn't come bigger than the African Cup of Nations because you play against the top countries on the continent.
Have you started processing what qualifying for AFCON means to your team? And are you thinking of specific objectives for AFCON, even though it's far away?
See, a person don't want to cloud your thinking, because tomorrow is another game in the COSAFA Cup. And that is what we concentrate on fully. And when that is done, then we can start thinking about the African Cup of Nations.
You are more closer to the players than the rest. What would be your message to the South African Football Fraternity when these players go back, in terms of the potential you've seen in the squad?
No, I hope they watch them on COSAFA TV. Quality players, quite a few quality players in the team. The most important thing at this age, they must be managed properly. And, you know, we've heard so many times that that was a good player as a junior, but his attitude didn't allow him to progress. Now, we want to make sure if these players are managed properly, that the attitude stay level-headed and concentrate on becoming better all the time. So yes, the attitude and the values within the players needs to be installed.
You've played football at the highest level in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Any particular player that is giving you goosebumps in terms of the potential and that talent?
Man, there are quite a few players for different reasons. You know, you get the Mabenas, you know, he can take on any defender, score goals out of nothing. Then you get a Benjamin Wallace at the back that's so calm and collected. You get a Sifiso Temba at the back, you know, built with steel. That is the type of combination that you need. You get Xavier and you get Gabriel in the middle of the midfield. Classy players that can turn a defender very quickly, play you through passes. So in the team itself, you've got quality.
South Africa took gold in the COSAFA Girls Under 17 Championship after they beat Zambia in a hotly contested final that finished 4-3. Their coach Victoria Mbata sums up the competition and where to now for these girls.
Welcome, Coach Mbata, to COSAFA TV. Congratulations for winning the championship.
Thank you very much. It was a good game, eh?
How would you summarize the final in terms of how you started and how you finished to win the championship?
Yeah, we started on the 21st back in South Africa. We organized a camp for the ladies. They were coming straight from the examinations. We gathered them together. I think we, as all teams, all African teams, we need to understand the importance of camping. That is where you prepare your teams physically, because the physical conditioning is very, very important. Especially your strength training is very, very important. Your endurance is very important. And then most importantly is the understanding, tactical understanding of the players. They need to be able to understand and complement each other when we play. We because of the time, the short time that we noticed, we decided to put everything under one training session and make sure that we get all those components under one training session. We cannot isolate any training session. But most importantly, those three, that's what we did.
And now, where to now, having won the championship, what next now for this under 17?
Some of them are 16 years old. We need to make sure that they get to under 20s. Some of them are small. We need to make sure are young. We need to get other players to come and beef up the team. And we need to keep them active. And the good thing about South African ladies football is that there are leagues. There's Sasol League, there's Hollywood Bats, and most of the players are playing in those two leagues. And we have a technical center also in Pretoria, a high performance center. That's where we keep all the good players and make sure that they are active the whole year. And we need to prepare the team for the qualifiers next year.
Where does this rank to you as a coach in your career?
Personally, I'm a student of the game. I'm still learning, and I'm happy that I got a call today. I'm sure most there will be opportunities showing up, but I'm still committed with SAFA, South African Football Association, and anything they want me, the SAFA wants me to do, I'll be more than happy to do it.
What can you say about the potential of your players to go far in their careers?
These players have shown me something I've never seen. They are very disciplined. They have got energy and they work hard. They take instructions. And I would like to see them in Banyana Banyana. You know, currently our Banyana Banyana, our first team is doing good. So I'm sure Coach Desri will be interested in having young players. And as well, I would like to see them playing all over the continent and abroad in Europe, because of what I saw, they've got their potential. They are very, very good. And as young as they are doing a lot of stuff in training. They don't complain. They push themselves. They made our job easier.
Let's go back to the final. Did the way the opposition play pan out the way you expected them to play, or there was an element of surprise? Or
we expected them to pump all the balls to us, and yes, they did. But towards the end of first half, we realized that we had a gap in the middle field, because now they were starting to win all the balls in the middle field. And then at halftime, we told them that no ways, let's change the tactics. Let's press them in the middle field. Let's press the supply and frustrate them. After frustrating them, that is when we started to realize there are gaps in between their defense, and we utilized those gaps. And then we did the same, pump the ball behind them and make sure that our wingers run to the balls. I ran to those balls, and that's how we killed the game.
How difficult was it for you, having gone in front, then you were behind? Was it a bit frustrating?
It was frustrating. It definitely was frustrating. But we kept on encouraging the girls to win all the balls, number one. And number two, we reminded them that they need to be consistent in their attack, because we started to fall back now in creating a space in between the defense and the middle field. We told the girls that they need to push up as much as possible, so that as soon as they close that gap, we will be able to play those balls behind them and get them on the counter.
How would you summarize the entire tournament taking place in Malawi in terms of the environment, the competition, the fans?
First of all, I would like to thank God for giving me this opportunity. I would like to thank South African Football Association. I would like to thank COSAFA. I would like to thank Region 5 Organizing Committee. I would like to thank my family. I would like to thank my technical team and the girls. They did a very, very good and a wonderful job. And a very special thanks to Malawi for hosting these games. We didn't have any problem. They really showed us that Malawi is the warm heart of Africa. We would definitely like to come again and play in Malawi.
Any new thing, a word in local language? Any food, any new things that you pick from Malawi going back to Africa?
Mulibanji.
Mulibanji.
And we ate a lot of, what do you call this fish?
Chambo.
Chambo.
Okay. No,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
Wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Mark Lees and I had the pleasure of covering the World Cup from Qatar, and there was certainly a tournament that will go down as one of the best ever. Now we get the chance for a first-hand account of the event from our man who is still there, our very own Mark Leeson, as we reflect on Africa's challenge. This has been an unusual World Cup in the sense of its timing coming in the middle of the season. Do you think, Mark, that this has contributed to the football that we've seen on the pitch?
Yeah, absolutely. I think players would have been match fit, match ready. They've come straight from their clubs. They have had a good 3 or 4 months to peak in terms of their fitness. What usually happens at World Cups is that they are in June, July, and the players are absolutely exhausted at the end of long seasons. And that was a particular problem a couple of editions back, where actually Sepp Blatter brought in regulations that there would be a fixed vacation time for players, where there actually had to be a block where there would be no football at all, to try and give them a little bit of a break coming out of the club season and into the World Cup, because FIFA recognized that a lot of the World Cup previously, in terms of the quality of the football, was being hampered by the fact that the players were not fit. So I think this Winter World Cup, as they are calling it, is one that's got them thinking a little bit in terms of the timing. I mean, potentially in the future, to have it in a November, December really seems far-fetched, because, of course, the club seasons are so dominant and the clubs are so powerful as well. But the one factor in Qatar, certainly, or one of the many factors in Qatar, certainly has been the fact that the players...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
been up for it. They've been ready. And as a result, we've seen some really sparkling football.
And if we just talk about the general level of organization in Qatar, my experience when I was there, was it's very slick and well planned out. What's been yours?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the World Cup is like that traditionally. I mean, South Africa too in 2010 was a magnificently organized event. And there were very few mix-ups anywhere, be it in and around the stadium, highways, airports, etc. Everybody seems to pull together. It's a massive undertaking. It's well coordinated. Qatar, of course, has a big advantage of its geography in the sense of it's small and everything is close by. So it's been logistically, I think, a lot easier, the World Cup. You don't have to move people and masses and fans and supporters across large distances, which is obviously going to be the case in 4 years' time when we go to America. But organizationally, I think they didn't put a foot wrong. There was no particular incident. I think they maybe misjudged one or two of the fan zones in terms of the numbers there, but they quickly sorted that out. And they seemed a country who were really prepared and at the ready, not 100% sure of what was going to hit them, but certainly with enough personnel in place to deal with it when it happened. And we saw that with the fan zones. We saw that often on the metro, particularly this week in the semi-finals. The metros were really heaving. Very well coordinated jobs by the security and by the metro officials, and lots and lots and lots of personnel on hand to help, which was a sign of some very good organization, in my opinion.
So let's get stuck into the African teams then, starting with Tunisia, who went out in the group stages, of course. How would you sum up their campaign?
Well, Tunisia, before the World Cup, in my opinion, were arguably one of the worst African sides to ever go to a World Cup. And I based that on the fact that I think their qualification was so lucky. They were in weak groups. They had a weak pairing in the playoff. And they, even despite the mediocre opposition that they were up against, they certainly did not impress. They were very lucky to overcome Mali and to qualify for the finals. It was a own goal away from home in the first leg that allowed them to win on aggregate. They didn't even score a goal at home in the second leg when they were hosting the second leg of the qualifier. So, and of course, they'd done very poorly at the Cup of Nations too. They'd lost more games at that competition than they actually won. And they scraped through into the knockout phase went out in the quarterfinals. So going into the tournament, I didn't really hold out much hope for them. Young, inexperienced coach, and not a lot of quality players. But I think the big factor for Tunisia, and it was evident straight away, was the crowd. There are a lot of Tunisians who live here, who work, and who have made this their home, and who were there to support, and they created the most incredible atmosphere. And I think that really, really lifted the crowd. And that's obviously something that is true for Morocco too, and we'll presumably get to that a little bit later. But I think Tunisia played out of their socks, and they have a crowd to thank for a lot of that. I think that the win over France was a magnificent achievement for them. I mean, it's although it was, to be fair, the French B team, they were resting all of their players having qualified. It's still a magnificent scalp to have, and I think it'll be a confidence booster for Tunisian football. I do get the sense that they're going to change their coach, that they weren't happy, which I think is a little bit strange given they beat France and they certainly did not disgrace themselves. But at the end of the day, they pretty much did what we expected that they would do. They and maybe a little bit more. So I don't think they can be unhappy with their World Cup.
And moving on to Ghana.
Ghana, for me too, were a side who were potentially going to be very weak. Certainly nothing like the Ghanaian teams that have gone to previous World Cups and achieved. Of course, you know, 2006, their first appearance, they got through the first round. 2010, they got to the quarterfinals. This was a Ghanaian side I thought that would do very poorly. And I was very surprised in the beginning when they started their first game against the Portuguese with the five-man defense. I mean, that's not Ghanaian football. It was a rather cautious way to go into the game. Obviously, a little bit scared of Cristiano Ronaldo and his teammates, but still showing a real lack of ambition. And I think once they'd gone behind in that game and they changed it up and looked to maybe be a little bit more expansive and to actually try and get back into the match, they realized that they had the potential to actually go toe-to-toe with some of these bigger sides. So You know, taking a coach to a World Cup who hasn't even coached a club. Otto Addo is a German-born Ghanaian whose pedigree is youth football in Germany. Admittedly, they were a little bit in a pickle because they had to make the appointments coming out of a very poor Cup of Nations, and they didn't have much time before the World Cup qualifiers in March. But I still think his hand, he showed his hand there as a, you know, someone who at this level of the game has got a lot to learn, and that set Ghana back. I think they bounced back very well in the second game, certainly gave themselves a chance to qualify. There was the expectation for that final match against Uruguay that they might still make it, plus still get some revenge for what happened in 2010. But I think ultimately that would have been a bonus for Ghana, for this generation of Ghanaian players. There are a lot of youngsters there who are, I think, going to be a much more potent force in the coming years. But this is a new generation that's starting now. We'll see the IU brothers leave, one or two other players, and then we'll see a lot of exciting players like Mohamed Kudus, Sulimana from Rennes in France, the youngster Isakyu, who plays at Sporting Lisbon. He only had a few minutes on the pitch, but he looked bright and he looked hungry. And I think we have the makings of a Ghanaian side that could well go on and win an African Championship in the future. I think there was enough on display there to suggest that they've got something now. So what they need to do is to get themselves a decent coach and a leader for this group, and someone who can pull it all together and get them going.
And just on that, Mark, one of the unusual aspects of this World Cup for African teams was the fact that all five coaches were essentially homegrown. I hear what you're saying about Otto Addo, you know, German born, but Ghanaian roots and whatnot. Is that kind of the way to go? Is the era of sort of foreign coaches on big money coming in to lead African teams, have we left that behind us?
Well, on the evidence of the moment, no, because, I mean, you look at countries like Nigeria and Egypt just recently, both employing Portuguese coaches. I think there'll always be a place for a big name coach from Europe. He does bring a gravitas, a sense of purpose that perhaps, you know, an African coach doesn't carry with him unfairly or fairly. But I think certainly the sense that you need a coach who understands the culture, who understands the way to deal with players is more and more important. A coach who can foist a family atmosphere, who can create a sense of purpose for a team, not rule dictatorially, but, you know, to make it a pleasant atmosphere for the players. That's becoming more and more important. I mean, we're dealing with teenage millionaires these days, you know, pampered, cloistered players who probably increasingly now need an arm around their shoulders rather than someone scolding them, which was the old way. I think that must be taken into consideration. And Walid Regragui obviously got it right for Morocco. He really did galvanize his side all the way through the semifinals. But I still think we're probably going to see a mix over the coming years, if not decades, of, you know, big name imports mixed up with exciting young coaches given an opportunity at the highest level.
And if we move on to Cameroon, perhaps it's kind of a typically topsy-turvy campaign for them that ended on a high with that massive win against Brazil, but ultimately not enough to get into the last 16.
Yeah, I think there again, inexperienced coach, maybe a bit too much meddling by the Federation President, Samuel Eto'o, who seemed to be pushing all the buttons. Not enough quality in the squad, not enough depth. There was obviously the Andre Onana incident, which saw their top goalkeeper leave for the clash with Rigobert Song. So obviously the confidence in the coach is not there from the players who play at a high level in Europe and who are exposed to very good coaching, particularly like someone from like Onana, who's come from the Ajax Amsterdam school. He would know what a good coach is and what a bad coach is. And he obviously felt that Cameroon were being let down. That led to a confrontation with the coach and his departure from the World Cup. But yeah, at the end of the day, there wasn't much hope for Cameroon, and they kind of delivered on that prediction. However, beating Brazil also puts some gloss on their World Cup, and it was only their third win, or sorry, it was their first win in 20 years of the World Cup. They've been to more World Cups than any other African side. So I suppose we can give them sort of 6 out of 10. It wasn't a failure, but no one really expected them to go through in what was a very tough group. I mean, Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, that was extraordinarily hard for them to progress from.
And then if we move on to Senegal, obviously they had a huge blow in the build-up to the tournament with Sadio Mane ruled out through injury, still got through their pool and then had a bit of a perhaps unlucky draw in the last 16.
Yeah, I think, Mane's absence would have restricted the expectation for Senegal. I think the fact that they lost an absolutely key player would have been a massive blow to their psyche as well. They tried really, really hard. I thought in the first game against the Dutch, they were unlucky to concede two near the end. They did well to come back against Qatar, and they did very well to beat Ecuador, perhaps a tiring Ecuador side in that last game. But that was basically a final for the two to decide who would go through with the Dutch. And then England really picked them apart. And there was a classic example of, you know, four games in the space of, I think, about 13, 14 days. And the fact that if you don't have a squad of players who are competing at the highest level on a regular basis, the fatigue, the exertion really does take its toll. And I think they really did crumble against the English. It was a very easy win for England and a rather disappointing way to go out. It would have been a massive scalp had they won that game. So I think there'd be a lot of empathy with Senegal. But there was a sense maybe they were going to be Africa's big hope for this tournament, but that went when Mane did his knee in the game with Bayern Munich.
And then we have the shining light, Morocco, first African team to reach the semi-finals and really did it playing some excellent organized football.
Yeah, and I think, first of all, we must acknowledge the crowd and how much of a 12th man they really were. I mean, the noise they made was absolutely incredible. I think when they played the first game against Croatia, it lifted them. It gave them a result. And I think they suddenly thought themselves, hey, hang on, we can do something here. I felt in the second game against Belgium, they were really tiring. They were in some trouble. And although Belgium were fairly mediocre that day, you felt that they were ready to be picked off, that they were absolutely exhausted, Morocco, now with a second match in 4 days against high-quality European opposition. And then all of a sudden, they had that free kick, tight angle, goalkeeper Courtois, perhaps at fault for Belgium, goes in the back of the net. Morocco score their first World Cup goal. Crowd goes absolutely nuts. And the lift it gives the players, it just gave them a complete second, third, fourth wind. And they played out of their socks in the last 20 minutes. Belgium didn't have a way back. Second goal on the counter. And suddenly you've got a 2-0 victory against Belgium under your belt. And 4 points in the bag, and your whole World Cup changes. And of course, the prospect now of playing Canada, you know, the weakest team in the group. So it really, that free kick, in my opinion, changed it all for Morocco. That 70th minute effort, just when they were tiring, created the whole World Cup for them. And they rode the wave after that. They were better than the Canadians. They were tired. Again, the crowd helped them through, conceded an own goal. So still not beaten by any other team. And then off against Spain in the round of 16, very defensive performance. I mean, a little bit lucky there, if we are to be fair. The Spanish had incredible amount of possession, not too many chances until the last 20-odd minutes, I think, of extra time when Morocco were really, really hanging on. Wonderful penalties, both converted and saved by Youssouf Bonou, and a first ever quarterfinal for them, a fourth one for Africa. Everyone's over the moon, and from there on, anything was possible. I think they ran into a Portuguese side, obviously, with their own problems around Ronaldo. That must have helped them a little bit, but Portugal certainly looked a quality outfit. They started that game very brightly, and all of a sudden, boom, Morocco get a goal. It was a fantastic header, and then showed incredible grit, incredible strength, and just held out as they had against Spain. This time with self-belief, you know, when you beat Belgium, when you beat Spain, and you're leading Portugal 1-0, your whole mindset changes. So I think they were absolutely fabulous in that game. And then the euphoria of a first African side into the semi-final. Obviously, a bridge too far against the French. And you could see that they were absolutely out on their feet. And the coach said as much afterwards. He said, a lot of players playing at 60 to 70%. But still, at the end of the day, a magnificent story, and I think probably Africa's best World Cup.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, if we take it all in as a summary and look at this, is this kind of a watershed World Cup for Africa, being able to prove again that they can perform and beat teams at this level after the disappointment of 2018? Or is that reading too much into it?
No, I think it's a watershed in the sense of it gives everybody a belief now. Remember, next World Cup is 48 teams in North America. There'll be 9 African sides. They might be a 10th through the playoffs. And I think every single one of them will have Morocco as the reference point. And they will go to that World Cup. A lot of them will, there's a possibility that a few of them might be for the first time, or certainly for the first time in a long while. They will go to that World Cup believing that they could do as well as Morocco did. I think it's been a huge game changer for African football, just in terms of the mindset. Remember, Russia was an absolute failure 4 years ago. The fact that not a single African side made it through to the second round. And there's been a lot of, a lot of discussion over the last 4 years about that. There's been a lot of concern in African football about where Africa is going. Why is it not pushing forward in the way that many people predicted it would? So this Moroccan achievement takes, they take a whole continent on their shoulders with them. And I think it gives everybody huge, huge confidence.
And then finally, if we look ahead to Sunday's final between Argentina and France, Messi against Mbappe, two PSG teammates, it should be a fitting finale to what has been a really exciting and dramatic tournament. Just your view on that game?
Yeah, well, the Messi factor is obviously the sentimental one. And I think, there's so much support for him here in Qatar from people who want him to do well, want him to crown his career with the World Cup. But from an African perspective, of course, this is a French side packed with African talent. You know, there's players from Benin, from Mali, from Guinea-Bissau, from Cameroon, from Angola, from the Ivory Coast. I mean, it's a team full of African talent, and I think the continent is going to be behind France on Sunday, and I think France are going to be the stronger side. I think Messi is up against Mbappe, and it might be more the Mbappe show than the Messi show. I mean, sentimentally, you'd like to see Messi finally win the World Cup, but I think at the end of the day, the French are going to be too powerful.
That's it for another episode of the CASAFA Show. We'll be back with one more in 2022 next week, and wish you all a very restive, festive season. Don't forget, you can listen to more of our podcasts on Soccer Aduma Radio, CASAFA.tv, Spotify, and iTunes. And you can also get the latest news via our website at www.casafa.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from 2 closet finishes and 4 colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.